are listening to Against the Grain. My name is Sasha Lilly. Nearly 15 years after its disintegration, so many questions remain about the Soviet Union. What was the nature of the system? Was it in fact socialist or something else? Did its failure illustrate the futility of attempts to envisage life after capitalism, or was the Soviet experience shaped by more factors specific to the former Tsarist Empire? Few people have examined these questions as closely as Moshe Levine, the eminent scholar of Soviet social history. In his latest book, The Soviet Century, published by Verso, he draws on a wealth of newly available Soviet archival material to exhume the complex history of the USSR from the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917 to its unraveling in 1991. Born in what was then Poland, Moshe Levine experienced the system from within, both as a collective farm worker in the USSR and a soldier in the Soviet Army. Levine is Professor Emeritus of History at the University of Pennsylvania and author of many books, including The Making of the Soviet System, Russian Peasants and Soviet Power, and the just-reissued Lenin's Last Struggle. In 1917, in the midst of World War I and the disintegration of the Tsarist state, the Bolshevik Party came to power in Russia under the leadership of Vladimir Lenin and Leon Trotsky. And yet, until that point, most communists within Russia did not believe that the time was ripe for a socialist revolution. When I spoke to him recently, I began by asking Moshe Levine to talk about the thinking of Lenin on the prospects for socialism in Russia.
The socialism in Russia had absolutely no prospects whatsoever, and Lenin was not that stupid to think so. The problem is that all the other parties who also understood that socialism is not feasible in Russia, they were looking for a liberal system. They thought that the liberal system is feasible. In other words, a bourgeois democratic, this is how it was called in the language of the political people of the time. That is the Mensheviks and the socialist revolutionaries who were the mainstay of the provisional governments, of all of them. So they believed that there is a road. And the road open for Russia is not socialism, that everyone agreed. I mean, there was no doubt about this. But they believed that there is, a capitalist democracy ahead. And they were very, very wrong. Because this analysis didn't work. They were trying and trying, plenty of honorable people, and falling, one after the other. And in the meantime, the country was only continuing to make the Tsarist crisis ever more profound.
And the reason that people didn't believe that the country was ripe for socialism was what? Because of the absolutist system? Because the economy was so underdeveloped?
Underdeveloped. Lenin was not talking about... he was talking about a revolution done by socialists, but he didn't expect socialism the next day. The problem is that launching this slogan did work. Why did it work, the slogan? Not that the peasants knew what the word socialism is, but the peasants have a deep sense of social justice. And inside the slogans of the socialistically speaking people, you have social justice, you have against the exploitation by other classes, you have against the exploitation by the bureaucracy, etc., against discrimination of anyone. And peasants use these terms themselves. They know what classes are. They know what the rich is as against them. They know how discriminated against they are. So they don't need to read Marx to understand these things simultaneously and spontaneously.
Well, Trotsky and then Lenin changed their views about the viability of socialism in Russia with the assumption that socialism would take place in Western Europe first. Can you talk about the shift in their thinking?
They never could have any socialism, really socialism, from the moment of taking power without a socialist revolution in the West. And this one didn't happen, therefore they are taking power and going through transitional periods. And the transitional periods, I described it, and I also described in the Lenin's Last Struggle. he teaches them to go through a transitional period that he calls state capitalism. State capitalism means that the state is the capitalist. Capitalists are allowed to run. It is a market economy. They are allowed to exist, but they are not allowed to take power in the state. The socialists who took power, the Bolsheviks, they'll begin first by what is feasible. In other words, they'll produce a controlled capitalism. And then he has another thing that the Chinese for the moment failed to do. He wants a deal with the peasants, and he calls it a cooperative deal with them. Give them the right to organize themselves into cooperatives, which is again market.
So the period that you're talking about of state capitalism followed, so just to give some chronology, after the revolution, there was a civil war where the Red Army fought monarchists and conservatives, the White Army. And during that period, the economy was under something called war communism, very controlled state top-down.
It's a war camp. State capitalism or nothing. This is a simple war camp. It is a directly controlled military organization who takes food by force because it has to feed all the grain areas were taken by the whites. The country, the Bolshevik side of the country, didn't have the food, and so therefore everything was just with a fist. That is war communism. But the word communism has no meaning here. It's because they were calling themselves communists. Somebody called this war communism. But it wasn't communism. It was just a requisition.
Mm-hmm. And then that was followed in 1921 by new economic policy, which is this form of market socialism that you're talking about.
They did not call it market socialism, but it is during this period. Remember that Lenin is a man who is searching. He himself says that we don't yet know what system will come out here. He works à tâtons, you say it in French. He is groping, he is searching. And so the ideas that he proposed about state capitalism is for the longer term, and an app is a good introduction to this. It's a controlled market economy, but a market economy planned. And this is what we have. In fact, by 1926-7, the country really recovered very nicely. The problem was that it recovered to the level of Tsarist Russia, whereas the West recovered beginning from 1923 was on a very much higher level. So the recovery of the Soviet period at that time was still to a very low level of economic strength. So therefore, the next step begins with Stalin's big construction sites that really at that time the West was in a great crisis, and this created a bewilderment and admiration, etc., etc.
And we'll talk about that forced industrialization in a moment, but I'd like to talk for a moment about the transition from Leninism to Stalinism. Now, Lenin died in 1924, and it's become a truism for many that Leninist socialism was a precursor of Stalinism, and in fact that socialism cannot but turn into a highly centralized and repressive system. In your book, Lenin's Last Struggle, which has been re-released in a new edition, you dispute that conclusion. Can you tell us why?
The problem of Lenin and Stalin, the big clash between them, is around how the USSR is to be built. What kind of state, because it will be an international state. Here is the big battle at that time.
So now you're talking about the many, many national states or nationalities existing within the former Tsarist Empire.
And Stalin wants a highly centralized Russian state, in which all these nationalities have each one some sort of autonomy. And Lenin came up with the conception of a USSR, in other words, an organization in which all those states are states and they have equal rights. In fact, Stalin already then, during this discussion, he's phoning to the Russian nationalism. Lenin came out very severely, very strongly against this, demands for each one of them a real statehood with equality with Russia. And Lenin managed to win, and a guy like Stalin doesn't forget being defeated. It's a catastrophe. He lives it very deeply and wants revenge any time when it happens. And therefore, there's a battle. Lenin wins, Stalin loses, and they create the USSR as a federal state, in which each of the states have full governmental sovereignty with the right to quit if they want to quit. And that ended, of course, very quickly because Lenin died and Stalin began to enforce his place and his policies very, very soon. And the Bolsheviks were actually his main target. The first target was to destroy them, and he did this very, very skillfully.
And it seems that Lenin, more than any of the other Bolsheviks, realized the danger that Stalin posed to the revolution itself. And Lenin wrote what has become known as his last testament, urging that Stalin be removed. Can you describe Lenin's suspicions about Stalin and then the fate of this last statement?
Yeah. Stalin was a man who knew how to play a game. He looked for most of his party people as a simple, dedicated, extremely friendly, etc., etc. Stalin used stupidly the fact that Lenin was, for most of the time, until his death, he was all the time ill. And so therefore, his wife, Krupskaya, Lenin's wife, was informing him, because she was in Moscow and she was in government, informing him about the doing and all kind of intrigues of Stalin. Lenin begins to realize that Stalin is a master of deceit. That, in fact, behind this very polite and very friendly and very quiet man, as he always appears publicly before the party congresses, he hides a guy who is evil. He realized that he's a filthy intriguer. And after Stalin's defeat about how to organize the USSR, his opposition to Lenin was extremely deep by then. Lenin, who observed all this, reached the conclusion that this guy has to be demoted. So this is what he writes in his testament. He is not good for this. Take him down.
And what was the fate of his testament?
They didn't follow this because they did not understand Stalin as Lenin understood him.
You mean the other Bolsheviks?
The other Bolsheviks, they did not see this that way. Trotsky and Zinoviev and Kamenev and quite a lot of other people could not guess the game of Stalin. They didn't understand, and they quarreled about themselves, how to deal with him. And Trotsky, for instance, didn't understand at all what this guy is. And he was opposed to Lenin's idea to depose Stalin. So I thought, what happens to this Trotsky? He is, after all, a superb politician and a man of great intellect. And then once, when sitting in an archive, out of a file fell out a little piece of paper. You realize what can happen in an archive absolutely accidentally. This little piece of paper did not belong to the file. And it turned out that this was the diagnosis by the same doctors who were in the process of handling Lenin. They also checked Trotsky. And in fact, Trotsky at this moment was extremely ill, really ill. He was very sick, and so he was losing control. He was opposed to to doing anything against Stalin, etc., etc. He got lost. Zinoviev and Kamenev got lost without the boss, because there were so many complicated things to handle, and they got used that they have with whom to handle it, with Lenin. The moment they come to Stalin, he cheats them. He gives in to the one, he attacks the other, he manipulates. It was a different creature. And my little theory is simply that in the process of producing a state, which is a thing to which this party or no party, whoever was in power, doesn't know how to do this. The Bolsheviks were a party of illegal revolutionaries, and they knew how to do this because this was the activity. And suddenly they have to run a state. And they succeeded. They created ministries and organizations and armies, etc., etc. But what happens to the party? That is, in itself, the party is internally democratic. There are good votes, everything is all right. But this party takes over state positions, and the party becomes actually a power structure. In other words, they become an administrative class. So here is a transformation of a revolutionary party into an administrative class, which could not have happened, because they are now creating a state. And I think that in this process, much was lost. In other words, revolutionary guys were fired and became administrators, and it was much easier to cheat them or overcome them, swindle them, or in some way or another, take power over them.
Well, Trotsky argued in his book, The Revolution Betrayed, that Stalin was the product as well as the leader of a bureaucratic stratum that emerged as a caste of sorts dominating the revolutionary society. And for Trotsky, the bureaucracy was able to emerge because of many factors, including that the most conscious and revolutionary elements of the working class were killed during the Civil War, and Stalin flooded the party with those who could be seen as careerists, who were more interested in their personal power than the greater health of the new state. Would you agree with that analysis?
It's a good analysis. If you create a state and all these party activists become ministers and sub-ministers and bureaucrats, it's exactly what he's talking about and what I was talking to you about. There is a transformation of substance in this. They become actually an administration, but so is the party. And the party leadership is also an administration. This here is the one who knows how to maneuver administrations wins. The one who tries to stick to previous revolutionary, democratic, and ideological positions is automatically in opposition. And this, a Stalin, will destroy in a Stalinist way. He will just kill them.
One of the things I thought was particularly interesting in your book, which draws from a lot of recently released archival material, is how in the early 20s, there were many signs of Stalin's modus operandi, including his attitude about where responsibility resided for mistakes or obstacles. I wonder if you could talk about that.
Yeah. The complexity of this man is in him already then, but it evolves. His way of ruling is based on proving or nominating somebody as saboteur. In other words, anything that will work poorly, or he doesn't cope with, he will invent a plot, or he will invent a sabotage. He will declare that there was a sabotage. He will present before the public all these people accused and who will be publicly repenting and admitting, etc., etc. And in such a way, he will always get away with murder. In other words, he'll murder them. And considering that a head of a state presents people who admit that they did terrible things, and they go and they're being killed, no one for a very long period could imagine that this is an invention from beginning to end. Who would, in the country, especially where there is no free press or anything like that, no one could understand that this was invented. But this is how this man began to operate when he has the power. He invents danger. He announces that this danger exists. For instance, in 1933, at the beginning of the year, he declares that there is among the peasants there is an enormous plot against the Soviet regime to starve the regime and the whole nation, but depriving the country of bread deliberately. But now, when you know Stalin, you understand what he's doing. He's preparing an enormous assault against the peasants. And he actually created a hunger in 1933. This is a big, complicated story. This is how the guy operates. He invents enemies and kills them. So it looks like, and he invents them. So it looks like he is a man who takes care of the security of the state. But this is a problem that he takes care of the security of his personal power. Because for him, this power has to be of a type of a despot. which means he's not a leader of the country. He's an owner of the country, because the term despot is a Greek despotes, is an owner of a piece of land, of a farm. This is a farmer, it's my ownership. And this is how he worked, but the complication is that it was a psychic type. I mean, the complicated psyche, and the psyche was ill.
My guest today is pioneering scholar of the Soviet Union, Moshe Levine. He joins me by phone from Philadelphia. You're listening to Against the Grain, and my name is Sasha Lilly. Well, one of the themes of your book is the legacy of the past and how it overshadows the present. And one thing I wonder that you touch on in your book, The Soviet Century, is this tendency, this impulse of Stalin's towards hunting for heretics that you mentioned earlier. How much of that do you think could be attributed to the legacy of the past, or utilizing the Russian Orthodox Church and the pursuit of heretics within religion?
That it is very well known from his biographies that he was educated in a Pravoslav, in other words, in a religious seminarium. And repenting is, in fact, one of the punishments that can bring you to some remorse helps, supposedly, but in fact, you are destroying yourself by admitting to all the filth that you say that you did. So Stalin's method is taken from here, because he forces these people through tortures to come in the public and invent all the filth Stalin wants him to say. He comes and he says. He was tortured and he says it. There's so many cases of it that it's just painful to talk about this. But that's how the man operates. This is exactly the model of Ivan the Terrible, who was his idol, Stalin's idol. Because he was A, crazy like him, B, he tortured in public. He personally invented the tortures, and I have the descriptions of this. You will not eat for a whole month if I give you the examples. And he wanted to show to the public, to the Russian public, because he had a problem with his Georgian origin. He was afraid always that because he's Georgian, one day or another, some Russians will come and will kick him out. So he wanted to look Russian to them.
Well, it also seems that Stalin was someone who wanted to govern over the past, I mean, including his own, the fact that he didn't have a glorious history as a leader of the Russian Revolution, and he seemed to want to set about to try and change that historical record. Can you tell us, related to this, about Stalin's attitude towards Leon Trotsky, who was a brilliant thinker and the leader of both the Russian Revolution and then also the Red Army during the Civil War?
Yeah, that is the key element, because considering that Stalin is a man who invents or ascribes to himself all kind of talents, and especially what was important and crucial during the Civil War was military prowess, military leadership. And here was this guy whom he despised, Trotsky, who is the top man. In the military, he is not the commander-in-chief, he's a minister of defense. And proved himself enormously well. And considering that Stalin did not prove very much in this field, he, at that moment, to my mind, began not so much despise as poo-poo Lenin, or dislike him, because he allowed this terrible man to be the chief of arms in this very, very complicated war. Trotsky, of course, exhibited an incredible talent in this case, and Stalin could not survive this, actually, in some sense, considering of his image that he is the super strategist. That was extremely important for him to be able to claim capabilities of a war leader. Well, it's psychologically understandable.
And that's the voice of Moshe Levine. We'll take a short music break and be back in a minute.